So I know that you have wisdom to impart today, and I always have pen and paper ready at my call. And first, I want to share a little music to kind of get you ready, you know, to get you in that place. You know what I'm saying?
Let's do it.
Well, okay. It's so wonderful how we can merge the nostalgia of the past with the present moment for our virtual services. And through the magic of technology, I don't know why I'm talking so much about technology today, but here we are, magic of technology and the mastery of Leo. Please welcome Sarah and Leo from A Day Gone By at Symphony Space.
Nice.
Everybody falls sometimes. Gotta find the strength to rise from the ashes and make a new beginning. Anyone can feel the ache. Think it's more than you can take. But you're stronger. Thank you.
Sarah and Leo, when you look at the intention behind the words of that beautiful song, do you ever stop and think, what is it within us? What is it within us as a soul that never gives up creating inspiration? What is it within us as a soul that keeps producing generation after generation a form of art? And the art has the intention to tell us to remember, to tell us to reawaken, to not lose hope. Do you ever stop and think about what that is? What is the essence within us? And I think that it is the propulsion, the purity of the soul that will never die. And when that propulsion, that creativity, that art within the soul never takes no for an answer, is never weakened or destroyed, no matter how much the veils of forgetfulness or the domestication of fears that come our way, that time after time, era after era, resilience after resilience, it keeps popping up above the soil of any human resistance to say, remember who you are. Remember who you are. And it is that part of you that I am excited to speak to today, that inherent part of you that isn't the body, isn't the story, but the soul that never forgets. I came across a beautiful quote, and Leo, our wonderful designer, producer, extraordinaire who puts all of this video together, posted this quote by writer George Saunders, and it said, "Find out what makes you kinder. Find out what makes you kinder, what opens you up, what brings out the most loving, generous, and unafraid version of you, and go after those things as if nothing else matters." I want to break that down a little bit. First of all, find out what makes you kinder. So in reference to you and I as a soul being, that which is kind is inherent. It's already in there. So the finding out is more the curiosity of uncovering all of the reasons why we have built a resistance to that kindness. Find out what and bring out what makes you most loving, generous, and unafraid. Again, the same thing. All of that which is love, all of that which understands the plentitude of life, that there is enough for all of that that has a fearlessness within them is already in there. It's not something that we have to acquire. Again, it's inherent. It's the soul part of us that can never be fully suppressed. It can never be absent. It can only be welcomed at more levels of degree. And then to go after those things as if nothing else matters. And I love the idea that you can actually consider shifting that, and it's not anything you have to go after because it's not separate from you. But reawaken to those things as if nothing else matters. So the questions become, what makes you kinder? What opens you up? What does bring out the most loving, generous, and unafraid version of you? If you have pen and paper today, I think that that would be a really great set of questions that you could journal and sit with this week. What makes you kinder? What does make you kinder? Is it when you are reminded of an everlasting assurance? What is it that makes you breathe a little bit deeper? You know, when we were discussing kindness, my partner and I, I said to him, what makes you kinder, or what makes kindness so valuable to you? And his response to me after he thought about it was being seen and heard. Being seen and heard, not anyone coming in to try to fix, but just the awareness that the value of self was enough within another individual that they took the time to see and to hear them. And so what opens you up? What is it that makes all of the hesitancy or the old ideas of being fearful about what other people will think, those kinds of things, what does open you up and set all of that aside? And then what does bring out the most loving, generous, unafraid version of you? Great questions to ponder this week. And so today, what makes us kinder? To me, bottom line, what makes any of us kinder is when we remember that we are a soul and not a body. All that that means is that we remember our unlimited nature. I used to say often to my congregations, classes, teachers, students, anyone that I had the honor to be with, I would always say, consider this, you've already won. There's nothing that you need to earn or to do in order to receive some accolade or approval. You and I have already won, because in the great spiritual cosmology, what we are doing in this eternal cycle of being is that we are returning to the essence of the one, and there isn't anything that will ever prohibit that. Why? Because there's only one thing. Again, when we look at metaphysically and spiritually the understanding of life, we get to consider that there is no us and them. There is no duality. There's only a one beautiful, perfect organism. You can call that life. You can call it God. You can call it source or love, whatever term works for you. But that is unadulterated. That can never be destroyed or go away. And so we return back to where it is that we came from, realizing that in the cycle of this eternal journey, we've already won, because that return is guaranteed. I can never stop my appreciation enough for the parable of the prodigal son, because that story to me is the lasered version that what happens is some type of separation or duality causes an anxiousness or a longing or a desire within us. And so we get to go explore that desire. And even in the exploration and the fumbling and the stumbling, it is inevitable that we return to that which only welcomes and sees us as whole, complete, and perfect. It's our story. It's your story. And so one of the things that can help make us kinder is to relax with the concept, not just a concept, but can you make the concept a truth that you have already won? Can you allow that in? You've already won. What would happen to your breathing? What would happen to your striving and the fear? You've already won. Yes, it seems so real in this human skin suit that limitation is the thing that we have to battle day in and day out. And we're not here to say that those things aren't real in human perception. But there's also a multidimensional thing that is happening at the same time. That is the thing, that's the inherent thing that keeps whispering for you and for me to come back to what it is that makes us kinder. And so just for a moment today, let's listen to that. Let's listen to that voice. You know, I think of Emma Lazarus and her poem, you know, "Bring me your tired, your poor, your weary." So today, channeling a little bit of Emma Lazarus, Let's bring our tired, let's bring our collective weariness, and let's sort of lay it down on this energetic altar. And by being willing to set it down and not necessarily identify with it or hug it any closer to us than is necessary, let's just lay it down and give ourselves a little mini vacation where we allow that which is the soul to now come in and to be present, to listen with that purity from the ear that knows, to feel through the portal of the heart that understands that, yes, we are divine and we have already won, because there is no such thing as loss. All of those things then in this state of the soul don't feel absurd. They feel true. They feel right. In fact, we can sense the breath and the ease of the breath coming back to us. So let's bring our collective tiredness and our weariness, and let's lay it down. And simultaneously with laying it down on this altar, let us acknowledge our nobility, our infinite intelligence, our own divine design, both individuated in our persona and then as the one. Let's do all of that. So the questions, what makes you kinder? Well, sometimes, you know, and here we are, because we're talking soul to soul now. So we can look at this and we can go, of course, we want to gravitate and give more space and permission to what makes us kinder. And so in that permission, we allow that which is the state of curiosity to come up, the curiosity that helps us look at the landscape of our human reaction. And I'm always reminded of a familiar story, and I know that you know this story too. And so there is a beggar at the gates of a city, and he's there, and he gets to watch all of the travelers that pass every day in front of the gate. And a particular traveler says to the beggar at the gate, "What are the people like in that city?" And the beggar, actually being a wise sage in disguise, says to him, "Well, what were the people like from where you came from?" And he goes, "Ah, they were terrible. I had to protect myself at all times. I had to watch my back. They were nothing but gossips, and people would rob and steal at every opportunity. It was awful, and I hated it." And the guy at the gate, the wise sage in disguise, says, "Well, I think that what you will find is that the people in this city are the same." And that traveler then continued to proceed on. During the day, as more and more travelers passed him by, another one stopped and said, "Hello, my friend. I'm curious, what are the people like in this city?" And the wise sage, disguised as the beggar, said, "What were the people like from the city that you came from?" And he said, "It was wonderful. It was like family. There was a bitter sweetness that erupted within my heart when I knew that it was time for me to travel on. I will always cherish them in my memories, and I will always be grateful for the community and the lessons learned and the way in which we worked together." And the wise sage said to this traveler, "Well, I believe that you will find the people here to be the same." And that tried and true story, which I know that you've heard before, is important to repeat. It is important to return to, particularly in those moments when the weariness, the tiredness, plays a part in our forgetfulness of us as a soul. It's important to realize that weariness and tiredness in and of itself is not bad at all. In fact, it probably contains an intelligence which is allowing and communicating to our physical bodies to take a rest. And in those moments when we can see it for the wisdom of its communication to us, then we can do exactly that. We can pause because there is great value and there is great wisdom and there is great intelligence in the rhythm of the inhale and the exhale, the rhythm of the doing and the being. And so we look at that weariness not from a perspective of anybody else's fault, but we look at it as a part of the beautiful cycle and we honor it. But in those times when that weariness, which perhaps hasn't been honored before or has been judged because we've been taught to judge it, it then can fall upon and be projected upon other people being the cause of that. And much like the travelers on that wise road, we can begin to see that every single thing that we encounter is nothing more than the projection, the lens by which we see and view ourselves. And so can we be kind first and foremost to ourselves? Can we look at our cycle of doing and being, and can we regroup, and can we take a new year and create more loving and compassionate vows to the way in which we listen to ourselves and the way in which we monitor the human noise? Can we look at all of these things and let other people off the hook for being the reason why we are exhausted? And just look at the natural rhythm of weariness as a gift, and then proceed forward to direct kindness to ourselves and not make that kindness the responsibility of anything external. Curiosity then lets us see the way in which things continue to circle around to get our attention. Maybe what we do is we have some idea within us about working. And that idea about working and doing and striving is all centered around a fear. Some window of fear that tells us that there's not enough. Curiosity is the thing that brings us to this doorstep of our examination. It is said that the great Socrates said that the unexamined life isn't worth living. What I take from that is that's a direct arrow to say, become curious as to what it is that keeps cycling back. Be curious as a world traveler, why you want to know why this is this way and this is this way. And is it possible that it's nothing more than a mere reflection of our own internal world? Become curious as to the fears that keep cycling back. Become curious as to what keeps pushing that button inside of you, causing a reaction. Because curiosity then becomes a healing balm. It becomes a compassionate sandbox where we can kind of sit and, in retrospect, look with kindness at the history of our reactionary and our doing and our being. And in that curiosity, then, we can really, really get more in tune with what it is that makes us kinder. And so, what does open you up? I think that curiosity then is one thing that opens us up. So as a part of this new year, as you begin to journal and do the continued reflections that hopefully we all take permission to do at this time, that we can welcome in this energy of curiosity. Remember, as a soul, we've already won. As a soul, there is purity there. In the human part, the soul, non-dual, human, dual, right? The thing that believes in the us and them, the thing that knows there's only one, the soul. So as a soul, we can look at the human part of us that has subscribed to this idea, and we can look at it with curiosity and go, wow, I wonder what it is in this incarnation, this agreement that I came in to fulfill as David, you as you. What the lessons are. I can be curious as to what are the themes that continue to be recurring within me. I know as a boy growing up in what I like to call it stereotypical poverty, because I never want my story to contain any kind of exception, because I know that there is so much of that same experience across our own globe of humanity. That as I look at the stereotypical poverty of my upbringing, that I know many of the themes that brought upon the fear, that brought upon the hesitation of giving, that brought upon the ideas of not being good enough, that those things are a part of a greater cosmic lesson for my soul. Perhaps it is those things then that allow me to understand what kindness is. And to the degree that I can exhibit that kindness to myself is the degree in which I can genuinely walk into this human arena with a kindness that has no agenda. What does that mean? If I know that I know that I know, if I know that I'm a soul, if I have reawakened enough in my spiritual path to understand what I am, that I am something more beyond this. Yes, there are times when I forget, but let's say that the ratio of remembering now is pretty solid. Then I can walk into a world that is highly ungenerous and not be fearful because I know. And so the questions of what makes us kinder, what opens us up more, what brings about something more loving, generous, and unafraid is really in establishing that knowing. How do you and I establish the knowing that we've already won? I always create and work with an intention that says, show me. Show me concretely the way in which these things are exemplified. And I go back again to a time when I was in India, in the slum portion of the city of Bodh Gaya, where I have some schools that are operating through my Kaleidoscope Child Foundation. And I was there in the month of May. And just side note, you might want to skip that part of India in the month of May, because every day it was 113 degrees. And after several weeks of that, my final days there, I sort of succumbed to a heat stroke. And there was a little bit of drama with all of that. And I was very gingerly carried to the family of the young man who is our administrator, a family who lives in the slum, a family who had a fan, an electrical fan, but weren't really using it because they didn't want to have to pay for the expense of that cost. A family that share so many things in a very confined space. And here I am, carted in my weariness, laying on the bed. And the next thing I look up and there are these beautiful Indian women surrounding me, putting wet compresses and cool cloths upon my head. They've called the local Ayurvedic medicine woman to come, and she's shoving things within my mouth, like rock sugar and things, to help bring about relief to me. And it's all quite something, because I'm in a state of surrender. So here's kindness. Kindness is given to us all the time, because kindness is. Kindness is the boots to the ground action of love. Love just is. But remember, like the travelers, I will not be able to see the love or the exemplification, the boots to the ground examples and offerings of kindness, if I do not have something within me that can see that. And so here I am, noticing that there is an old part of me that wants to deflect the gift. The old part of me that doesn't want to receive anything, because, not because I'm not appreciative of it, but there's still some iota of a belief that says that I'm not worthy enough. But in this state, I don't have the energy to resist anymore. And these beautiful women are caring for me. And at that same time, the father of our administrator, who is a janitor at a Buddhist monastery, and I think his monthly salary is all of maybe about $48, comes in, sees what's going on, and very excitedly is talking to his son, our administrator. And the administrator says, "Now?" And the father is shaking his head vigorously. And in that moment, I learned that back in the 90s, that particular government branch in the state of Bihar in India had had a lottery and had given free parcels of land to lower caste men as an encouragement that perhaps they might farm it or create a business. They were too poor at that time to ever do anything with the land, but he still possessed the deed, now to a prime piece of land in Bodhgaya. And there had been many times when people had wanted to purchase it from him, but he had always kept it because it was going to be his gift to his son. And in that moment, lying in that state where I cannot resist this kindness, he gives me that parcel of land. He gives our foundation this parcel of land. And I remember crying. And I remember the statements of how sometimes we talk about those who appear to have the least are the ones who give the most. And think about that. Those who appear to have the least, it's just an appearance, it's a perception. But there is something within the soul of Nandu, our administrator's father, who must know that there's more than enough. That is far greater wisdom than any billionaire who may continue to try to protect and hoard. That is richness. That is kindness naturally exhibited in a way that is representational of God's wisdom, God's embodiment. And so we can become curious as to what it is that resists that natural impulse. The other thing that works in helping us with what makes us kinder is understanding this principle that we all subscribe to. It's one of the things that I teach all the time. The principle that God is, isness, God is, that one singular organism is the only reality. When we fall into the illusion of separation and duality, then what we are doing is we are veiling that principle. But in your curiosity, in your journaling, in your asking the question, what makes you kinder? What opens you up? What frees you to be more loving, generous, and unafraid? I can guarantee you that one of the things that is the good medicine of remembering that is realigning with that principle. Is speaking that request into the universe, show me the reminders of that principle at work. Show me when I forget the examples of that. And I see that people sometimes who appear to have the least, angels in disguise, are the ones who give us the most. And lastly, rhythm. The principle of rhythm. There's a wonderful book made popular in the early 20th century called The Kabbalion. And it's a list of principles that sort of outlined the way in which this existence works, the laws of spirituality. And one of them is the law of rhythm. And it says everything flows. Everything flows out and in. Everything has its tides. Everything rises and falls. The pendulum swings and manifestation of everything. And what that tells us is that when in the appearance of the thing that wants to make us afraid, in the appearance of something that sort of tweaks or picks at an old idea that makes us want to protect, in the appearance of those things, that principle of rhythm is still there. Can we breathe in and relax and know that as the wave ebbs, it comes right back? And so with these things this morning, I want to invite you for a moment of meditation. This meditation, what we're going to do, the aim of the meditation is to just allow ourselves to continue to lay anything that is in opposition of that natural kindness, that natural knowing, that we're going to lay it down. So wherever you are, whether you're watching this in real time or watching this the recording afterwards, I want you to take a moment at this point and just breathe. So Leo is going to help me here. We're going to set this up for you. So let's do that here. Just breathe. You can consider that kindness is. And as you continue to breathe, as you continue to breathe, we use these questions. What is it that makes me kinder? What is it that is already in existence in this world that I am forgetting? Thank you, omnipresence. Thank you, spirit. Thank you, God, that you never cease in reminding me that I am a soul, limitless, resourceful, open and available to a wellspring that never runs dry. Let me now meet my forgetfulness, not with some type of punitive shaming or comparison, but let me meet this now with a divine remembrance, a kindness that knows that it knows that it knows. What is it that will open me up? What is it that will open me up and to make me available to reclaiming myself as a soul? What must I begin to do to let myself off of the hook of story, of wounding? Because again, as those travelers, we see that the degree by which we may forgive ourselves is the degree that we can see the purity of those around us. And so we breathe in the availability to the question of what is it that will open us up? And again, what is it that makes us more loving? What is the version of us that is unafraid? Let us welcome that version in right here and now. We know that to grow, we must outgrow. May we celebrate the outgrowing of the old paradigm. May we give thanks to a world that is reflecting and offering opportunities for us to be kind moment by moment. And let us know that when we choose to be the vehicle of that kindness, that it comes with a spiritual coin that is limitless. It comes with a resource that knows no bounds. And this is our truth. And let's take a collective breath in together. And let us say yes to this path of curiosity, to this path of the principle, and to this path of that rhythm, knowing that all things are working together for our good. Join me in saying, and so it is. Ashe and Amen.